All right. This is going to be one we're all going to remember. And hopefully there won't be any technological competition for the faux pas that are going on this morning. But here we are. And I didn't really get a chance to welcome you at the beginning because of all of the craziness that was going on. So welcome to Unity of Fox Valley's Sunday service, brought to you today through Zoom on a limp, but brought to you today on Zoom nonetheless. It's really good to have you here. It's a rainy day, but we have this opportunity to be with one another and to share. So I wanted to play and show that Michael Jackson music video for you today, The Man in the Mirror, because I thought it was right on topic. Our talk topic today is walk the talk. And what we really are talking about is Unity's fifth principle. And that fifth principle restated is that it's not enough to understand spiritual teachings. We must live the truth that we know. So let me begin by telling you that as far as I'm concerned, I regard our fifth principle as our orphaned principle. And by this I mean we say it, we teach it, and then far too often we conveniently file it away, choosing instead to emphasize our other principles. To show you what I'm talking about, let me share with you two experiences that I had while I was a student at the seminary. The first was a class that I took called Unity in Contemporary Society. It was a 10-week class dedicated to research as to what Unity's historical involvement has been relative to social action. And I was on a team with two other classmates. The three of us spent 3 days a week for 8 weeks combing through the archives, poring over every single Unity magazine and publication that we could find, and trying to unearth those articles that in some way were related to social action. At the end of the term, we had to make a class presentation on our findings. We showed up on the day that this was due, and trying to be in integrity, our report consisted of sharing with the class that there was next to nothing to report. Virtually every article we found that was related to social action was nothing more than a reiteration of our fifth principle. We could not find a single program, plan, idea, or anything that was the least bit suggestive about taking action in response to social issues. And curiously enough, a large chunk of the time that we researched was during the 60s and 70s, when so much was going on and there was such a social consciousness in our nation to issues of involving social action. The second thing that I want to share with you is that my very first year at school, there appeared an article in Unity Magazine that was written by Ellen Davenport. And before I go any further, Ellen Davenport is deservedly a well-respected author and somewhat of a Unity icon. Her book, The Five Principles, is excellent. But in this magazine article, she was suggesting, maybe somewhat flippantly, I'm not sure, a sixth Unity principle, which she called mind your own business. And basically what the article was saying is, don't spend your time, don't spend your energy on trying to change the world or dealing with the problems of others. 2 days after reading that article, I had to give a talk in my homiletics class, and I decided to talk about how much I strongly disagreed with this article. Why? Because it completely stood in contrast with our fifth principle. My argument was that our way-shower, Jesus, did not mind his own business, for example, when he called the Pharisees out and called them whited sepulchers. When I was a kid growing up in the city, there were certain catchphrases that were part of the language. Really, they were very much a part of the culture. And these were phrases like, "You're all talk. Talk is cheap. Put your money where your mouth is. Put up or shut up. Money talks, BS walks." These were just a few. If you said something or supported something, you had better be ready to back it up with more than just words. And perhaps the most profound saying we had was one that all of you, I'm sure, are familiar with. Actions speak louder than words. More than one time, I heard one of my friends or my classmates tell another one, "I can take you. I can kick your butt." It wasn't just bragging. It was a form of a dare. And the fight was on soon after that. All of this is what our fifth principle is about. Our fifth principle is the glue that connects all of our other four principles. Or to put it another way, you cannot truly believe and embrace the first four principles and not have them somehow become manifest in the world in which we live. The fifth principle goes beyond believing that the other principles make sense and are right on. The fifth principle says, "Here I am, Lord, and I'm all in." An eagle that never flies isn't really an eagle. A rose that never blooms isn't really a rose. It just kind of looks like one. A Christ light has to shine. It has to be made manifest in the world, or guess what? Talk is cheap. The proof always is in the pudding. My favorite scripture on this topic is the story of Jonah. It is told, by the way, not only in the Hebrew scriptures, but also in the Quran. In the story, Jonah, who was comfortable, enjoying life at home, taking things nice and easy, is told by the Lord to get up, travel to the city of Nineveh, and deliver a message that the people there have to change their behavior or they are going to be destroyed. And Jonah basically responds, "I don't think so." So if Nineveh is that way, Jonah heads out to the city of Tarshish, which is that way. He books passage on a ship to get there. And while he's on board, a strong storm pops up, threatening everybody on board. Jonah understands that the storm is due to his attempt to run away from God. And he is now severely threatened with a storm that is also affecting the people around him. I hope you can appreciate the metaphysics of this. When we try to evade what we are called to do, it not only brings unrest to us, but it affects others as well because of our shared oneness. So back in the story, Jonah realizes this, and he tells the sailors on board to throw him overboard, to toss him into the sea. In some reluctance, they do this. And all at once, the seas begin to grow calm again. Jonah ends up getting swallowed by a giant fish. And he spends 3 days in the belly of the fish. There he undergoes a change of heart that is reflected in a prayer of thanksgiving, which he prays. And so God causes the big fish to spit him up on the shore. And Jonah goes off to Nineveh to do what he had been called to do. Emily Cady once said, don't read books. And I know she said it because I read it in her book, Lessons in Truth. Well, lately I've been reading a lot of books. And for whatever reason, I've been reading books that question the scriptures and some very basic Christian beliefs, including unities. These are books by Archbishop John Shelby Spong, different books on the whole God is dead theology, and books that really ask the question, does God really exist? And I share this with you because my attraction to these books and the questions they raise was a call of sorts, because they had a significant effect on me. I suspect, like most of you during the pandemic and the quarantine that we are all experiencing, I have had my high points, and thank goodness, mostly I have had high points, but there have been a few low points. Mostly, I've been okay, but at times, maybe not so much. And a few days ago, when I was out walking my dog, Rocky, all of a sudden, I was overwhelmed by the magnitude of the whole thing. And inwardly, I cried out, where are you, God? Don't you see what's going on here? Can't you see? Don't you care that we are hurting? The whole thing with this coronavirus isn't just about keeping us cooped up. More people have died from this virus than the number of Americans that died in Vietnam. And every day, the numbers just keep mounting. Our economy is in the toilet. People are losing their jobs. Poor people, the homeless people, the so-called little people are suffering the most. And throughout the world, everybody is desperately clinging to life and in a lot of pain. Aren't we your beloved children? Where are you, God? Then I just stopped and I asked, to whom or to what was I praying? I long ago have stopped offering prayers to some deity sitting on a heavenly throne in the heavens. I wasn't crying out to some God out there somewhere. The only place it made sense to pray these questions was to the God, the Christ, that dwells within each and every one of us. And then it hit me. And it goes all the way back to the opening video that I played before the talk. I'm looking at the man in the mirror. And then, realizing the answer to the question of, where are you, God? The next obvious question is, what is mine to do? And there's a need for us to ask this question, not just in response to the coronavirus crisis, but in general. I shared the Jonah story with you because there's a bit of a Jonah in each and every one of us. I definitely believe that the Lord, that God, calls to us every day to be about our fifth principle, to overtly manifest why we are here. And like Jonah, we often try to escape God and that call, not by traveling to another city, but by turning on our televisions, losing ourselves in a sporting event, choosing to hang on to our grudges and our resentments. We try to get away from it all, evade it all, by embracing our routines, our habits, and our addictions. We work very hard at not answering the prayer that God is praying to us. I do not believe for a moment that the COVID-19 is a punishment from the hands of God for our wickedness. I do believe that, like Jonah, so many of us have stopped listening. We have become so polarized that we have stopped listening to one another. We have taken to one another as labels: Republicans, Democrats, Jews, skinheads, blacks, browns, whites, Cub fans, Sox fans, old people, homeless people. We have adopted an approach of trying just to know enough about other people so as to put them in buckets so that we can know how we can deal with them going forward. And much of the time that means safety, safely, and from a distance. Think about it. Each of those buckets or boxes or categories that we use really represent our own personal city of Nineveh to which we are being called. And maybe, just like Jonah, we want to go anywhere but there. Jonah ended up in the middle of a storm. When we ignore something that we are called to do, we do experience that inner unrest, as was the case with Jonah, and it affects those around us as well, sometimes quite dramatically, sometimes in the abuse of another, sometimes in war, and most of the time, just making things really crappy for somebody else. Jonah ends up getting swallowed up by a big fish. Traditionally, churches and synagogues have interpreted this as a punishment for Jonah for running away. I don't think this is the message at all. I think it was a blessing for Jonah. Jonah needed a timeout. We all need a timeout once in a while. And maybe this whole quarantine thing that we are all experiencing right now is our 3 days in the belly of a giant fish. Maybe this is our much needed timeout. I'm not suggesting this as part of some divine design. I am strongly advising that we can use this whole stay-at-home thing that we're immersed in right now as an opportunity to catch our breath. It could be an opportunity for us, as it was for Jonah, to assess and pray a prayer of thanks for the gift of life that we all share, that we all enjoy, to pray for in gratitude for that, if nothing else, and to listen, really, really listen to what is ours to do. Our co-founder, Myrtle Fillmore, in her book, Healing Letters, warns us that it is not enough to pray. I want to read to you what she says in her book. To keep one's attention in prayers in the spiritual realm of mind without letting them work out into the soul's expression and into the actual physical doing of that which corresponds with what the mind and heart has thought and spoken and prayed is to court trouble. We all value meditation, and rightfully so. When you pray and meditate in one way, shape, or form, you should be listening to that still small voice that affirms that you are alive, you are loved, you are precious beyond belief, and you should be filled with joy and peace. But somewhere in your thoughts and prayers, you should be entering a plea. Spirit, move me. What is mine to do? I'm not making a case here for you to do anything over the top or do anything really dramatic. I'm not telling you to storm the castle or the citadel or the White House I'm not asking you to run for office or even the campaign for somebody. I'm not asking you to sell everything that you own and give the money away. I'm not asking you to do a darn thing, except maybe, well, to gently suggest that it is time to put up or shut up. I am not that still small voice, except maybe to be the still small voice that reminds you to listen to the still small voice. So how do you know if you're on track? If you are hearing the right call, if it really is the still small voice that is calling to you, and not just the voice of self, the voice of ego, I offer to you one clue. Whatever you hear coming to you that is yours to do, just like Jonah, it should be making you uncomfortable, at least somewhat. And I'm not talking about being uncomfortable like you have to go and do the dishes when you really don't want to get off the couch, or you have to go cut the grass when you really just would like to take it easy. I'm talking about a discomfort on a different level, the level of, gee, God, do you really want me to go to the Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go? Or are you serious, God? You want me to build an ark and spend 40 days and nights in pouring rain with all the animals? It should be something that creates some real movement. And there will be an inner resistance, because it will call you in a way that is related to the kingdom of heaven and not to the kingdom of the world. It will go beyond business as usual. Early on, I suggested that the fifth principle is the glue that holds the first four principles together. That fifth principle is what makes everything else real. The fifth principle not only reflects the first four, it crystallizes them. It births the inner Christ into so much more than a really nice thought. But don't take my word for it. Go inside and have a really good listen. And so, with that, I invite you to do exactly that and take this inside as we move into meditation.